Hello, hello, hello. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of April, and while, boo, the long weekend might be over, great news is, yay, this week's a short week. Woohoo! What a treat for us. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. Who are ISIS-K, the terrorist group claiming responsibility for one of the deadliest attacks on Russia in 2 decades? Flying taxis are apparently only a matter of years away. No, this is not a belated April Fool's joke from me. This is going to be our reality. And after a dominating few weeks from the Chiefs' Manawa, could the Blues women deliver the upset of all upsets as we near the end of Super Rugby Opiki? And the reasons as to why you can't get that song out of your head. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
It's been more than a week since a deadly concert hall attack near the Russian capital of Moscow, which killed 143 people and injured many more. Since then, details have emerged of those behind the shooting and their motives, with 4 men charged with committing an act of terrorism and a group called ISIS-K claiming responsibility, using statements, photos and a propaganda video to prove it. So what do we know about this ISIS-K group, and why would it strike Russia? Joining us now is Professor Ruben Azizian from Massey University's Centre of Defence and Strategic Studies, who earlier in his career was with the Soviet and later the Russian Foreign Service. Professor Azizian, why would ISIS-K choose to target Russia?
Russia is on the list of several countries that are considered by ISIS as hostile to ISIS objectives and goals. Russia has been involved in a number of activities, such as invasion of Afghanistan in the 70s, war against Chechnya, some activities in Central Asia that are perceived by ISIS, by a particular group of Khorasan, which is focused on Central and South Asia, as contrary to Islamic values, as impeding the process of creating the independent caliphate. So Russia is one of the enemies of ISIS.
And what do we know about this group, ISIS-K? How is it different from the wider group that we've just known as ISIS?
What happened, I think, as a result of a successful military campaign and confrontation by the United States and Western countries with ISIS, ISIS has been very much defeated in its very centralized form after the events that happened in Iraq and the Middle East. So ISIS has splintered. And these days, they are not really that much dependent on a particular headquarter or a hub, which they don't have. Instead, they are counting on various groups that pop up here and there. So each group has a certain autonomy, and the central command, which is, I think, actually working somewhere virtually, just sends them some basic directions or names, enemies or particular type of activities. And then the local groups decide what you know makes sense and where they can be more successful. So this particular group is a regional group that focuses on South and Central Asia, and so that's their job. However, I understand that they act beyond South and Central Asia.
It's been a few days since the attack. Where is President Putin finding himself at this moment? Is this damaging to him, an attack on home soil, and the fact he tried to blame Ukraine?
Yeah, I think Mr. Putin is one of these lucky people in the world who has that Teflon effect. This is part of that mentality, unfortunately, of the Russian public, that historically the Tsar and the boss, people like Stalin and others, were oftentimes seen as benevolent leaders. And all the bad things were done by some other people, people around the great leader. So I don't see this huge terrorist attack having any impact on Putin's reputation so far.
Professor Ruben Azizian from Massey University's Centre for Defence and Security Studies, thank you for joining us. Later on in the show, I'm going to make Jeff Wilson predict the winner of this year's Super Rugby Aupiki. There's still 2 weekends to go for this women's competition. We'll be covering it all the way through. So to make sure you find out if Jeff's picked the tourney winner, chuck us a like and a follow wherever you get your podcasts. How is this for pie in the sky? UK government wants flying taxis to take off in 2 years. Now that sounds wild, but that, my friends, was a very real headline from the BBC. And the Brits aren't stopping there either. Part of that same plan by its Department of Transport includes crime-fighting drones and critical medical deliveries like organs getting sent via drone as well. This all sounds like something from a television show or a movie, but we are now living that future. But is it one that we're going to live here in New Zealand too? Catherine McGowan from Whisk Aero, an aerospace manufacturer specialising in electric self-flying aircraft, is here now to reveal all. Catherine, hello.
Hi, Imogen. It's lovely to be here.
Are we really going to see the UK have flying taxis in just 2 years' time? Are we living that reality?
I think you're going to see that not only in the UK, but around the world. There are already prototype aircraft, electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, conducting test flights and, you know, developing products, certifying around the world. So, yes.
Are there countries already using flying taxis?
So there are several countries where flying taxis are in development and testing. So, for example, Whisk has been flying different generations of our prototype aircraft since 2010.
Wow. And what about here in New Zealand? Where are we at with flying taxis here? And when might we see them in the sky here?
So New Zealand actually has a really special role in this evolution of aviation. New Zealand has a leadership role in airspace integration, which is how we bring these new aircraft types, especially when they're self-flying or autonomous, into existing airspace alongside other aircraft. So CAA and Airways New Zealand have been conducting some trials to develop that future. But I expect you're going to see vertical takeoff and landing, so these air taxi aircraft, within the next few years. And then towards the end of this decade, you're going to see self-flying or autonomous aircraft like the Whisk 6th generation aircraft coming to market.
And it's just like, okay, so maybe it's not on the Uber platform, but like you could just order a helicopter.
Yeah, so the idea is it'll be part of an integrated transport landscape. So you might have a long-range flight, you might catch a train, and then you might catch a Whisk aircraft as part of your journey. So you can have another sustainable leg in your journey that helps you connect quickly across a city or to an island.
This is so, so crazy. And of course, infrastructure is going to play a big part in this, right? Because there'll need to be places, because it's not like you could just get your flying taxi to your mate's place.
Yeah, that's right. So initially, these aircraft will operate out of what we call vertiports, which is like a heliport, but it has the charging and the other infrastructure necessary for flying taxis. And they'll also operate on pre-planned routes. Picture like tram tracks in the sky. And this will help them to be safe and predictable around other traffic. So it'll be a while before it's backyards, but it'll certainly help people move around cities.
How affordable are these going to be, Catherine? I can't imagine it's going to be for everyone to use these flying taxis.
So at Whisk, we're aiming at a price point that's around the Uber X or Uber Black once we're operating at scale. So it's important to us that this aircraft is accessible in terms of cost, but it's also accessible in terms of the whole population. You know, we test wheelchairs, we test service dogs to make sure that everyone will be able to access this mode of transport in the future.
And what about non-service dogs, aka mine? Will he be able to travel with me in style?
Oh, I'll have to meet him personally, I think.
I'll apply for a special exemption. Catherine McGowan from Whisk Aero, fascinating stuff. Can't wait to chat to you in 10 years' time when these flying taxis are in the air.
Wonderful, thank you.
Okay, so how do you feel about these flying taxis? What do you think about this idea of them? A taxi flying you through the sky. Are you excited? No, thank you, not for me. Do you not care? Are you simply unbothered? We'll have a poll up on the Stuff Instagram later today. Make sure you get your vote in. Personally, I'm very excited. Imagine calling an Uber, but jokes, it's actually a helicopter. Head to NZ Stuff on Insta and get voting. Fun fact, did you know Te Reo Māori is considered one of the easiest languages to learn in the world? It's because the sounds typically remain the same no matter how the letters are arranged. And if you're wondering, Japanese is one of the hardest. Here's another fun fact. Here at Stuff, we're levelling up the amount of Te Reo Māori content on New Zealand's biggest news website. Using the power of AI, we're going to be translating articles at unprecedented scale. All of the translations will be overseen by an actual human Te Reo Māori specialist before being published. Kapai. Want to know more? Visit www.staff.co.nz/aitereo. After an epic showdown between the Chiefs Manawa and the Blues women, we are in for a stonker round this weekend for Super Rugby Opiki. There's now just 1 point separating these two women's teams, with Matatu and Hurricanes Poua nowhere near catching either of them. Sky commentator and former All Black Jeff Wilson is here for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Jeff, the Blues women thrashing the unbeaten Chiefs Manawa on Saturday night, 40 points to 26. What can we expect for these matches coming this weekend?
Well, they're playing in the last round for home field advantage, and the Chiefs Manawa, like you said, have got that 1 point advantage over the Blues. But I think more significantly, now the Blues have beaten the Manawa for the very first time, so they know they can beat them. The Chiefs side is a remarkable team, and they've got so much experience, so much talent. But what it means now is the fact that the next 2 weeks are about preparing for what's going to be the final. Now, whether that's in Auckland, whether that's in Hamilton, who knows? That's based on what's coming up next weekend. But more importantly now, once you believe and know you can beat a side, it means come finals night, all history is gone because it's been done before. So you can focus on one 80-minute performance, maybe even longer than 80 minutes between these two teams. But it was clearly the best performance of the Blues this season. It was incredibly strong and dominant. It was dominant. And it's put the Chiefs Manawa, I suppose, on notice, the fact that you can't just roll in under the pressure of the big lights, go, you know what, we can win this competition. So look, it certainly changed the dynamic of what's happening this weekend, and also the dynamic of what's going to happen when the final comes around.
And who do you think will be Queens of Super Rugby Opiki 2024 in 2 weeks' time? Go on.
It's momentum's a funny thing, you know. And so, you know, if you continue by having that momentum this weekend, imagine the Blues, if they win and get a bonus point and then they find their way to hosting the final, then all of a sudden, you know, I think they become favourites. I think whoever's hosting will be favourites for it. But if I was looking squad for squad, I put the two teams down on paper, when the pressure comes on, the Chiefs Manawa side, I think, will know how to go out and win. They've just been put on their heels now. They've been put on notice. When good teams are put on notice, you see a response.
It's going to be thrilling right to the end. In case anyone wants to catch those games this weekend, the Blues women are playing the Hurricanes Poua at 2:05, and then it's Chiefs Manawa v Matatu at 4:05. Cannot wait. Let's turn now to the men's comp. The Satyrs finally got a win under the belt, but the Canes have potentially lost their key player of the season, Cam Roygaard. Is this a sign that the men's table is about to have a shift and a bit of movement?
If you look at the table, it's actually a great competition. You know, all of a sudden we've got a number of teams who are, you're talking about being in the fight for the top four places, then you've got the wider group to the top eight. I think what you are seeing, though, I think there's a bit of a shift. You can see the squads, you know, the demolition job the Hurricanes did on the Highlanders, for example. It just shows the gap between the two groups. Clearly the Blues were dominant over Moana Pacifica. It shows that where they're sitting right now. They've got a couple of injuries, though, significant injuries inside their group, and whether or not Stephen Petafetta is fit and available sooner rather than later, I don't know when he might be back. He went off with a shoulder injury. The big concerns there. The Cam Roygaard one, yes, it affects the Hurricanes, but they've got TJ Perenara. They've got a bit of depth in that position. That nice to have that sort of experience around. And their squad looks really good. Like, they're playing some fantastic rugby.
And quickly as well, while you're here, the Wires, Andrew Webster's team, taking home a big win at home. Spectacular strength, I thought, right at the end there, where it looked like the Knights could have maybe run away with the game. What did you make of the Wires' performance?
Really important performance, I think. You know, like, after you've seen games slip away already so early on in the season, games that you thought you could win, you're in the fight, and then you lose some big moments. They won the big moments late. They did enough to be comfortable, feeling comfortable, good about where they're at. The Knights come back. You know, this is a really difficult competition. These sides are so, so good, you know, across the board. And any team on any given night can provide a challenge to anybody else, regardless of where it says on the table at any point. So there's always a big performance in them. But I think for the Warriors, getting back to even, getting back to 2-2, just doing all the things, winning at home, just demonstrating once again there's a toughness about them.
Geoff Wilson, Sky commentator and former All Black, thank you for joining us again for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. And remember, you can watch every match from round 7 of Super Rugby Pacific live on Sky Sport and stream them on Sky Sport Now as well. And Sky Open will also have free-to-air live start coverage of the Chiefs v Moana Pacifica from 7 p.m. Saturday. You know when you get a song stuck in your head and it just goes round and round and round, the same few lines, on and on and on. Sometimes you don't even exit the first verse or you're stuck in the bridge. Well, it turns out there's some science behind all of that. In fact, according to a new study, the lyrics of English language songs have become simpler and more repetitive over the past 40 years. Researchers analysed the lyrics of 12,000 English language rap, country, pop, R&B and rock songs released between 1980 and 2020 and found that generally lyrics have become easier to understand over time and the number of different words used within songs has decreased, particularly among rap and rock. The hypothesis is that the trend towards simpler songs could reflect a change in music consumption. For example, like listening to songs as background music rather than actively listening. Songs, this research has found, also have become more emotional and more personal. So it sounds like musicians are sitting down saying we need to make simple songs that make people cry. Bada bing, bada boom, that's how you make a tune that gets stuck in people's heads. I want to know, though, the science behind Baby Shark, because I'm unsure that falls into any of the categories of English language rap, country, pop, R&B or rock songs. However, 9 times out of 10, if I've got a song stuck in my head, it is that one. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Have a good one.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues.
You don't want to be held to account rising child abuse numbers.
You can manipulate crime statistics.
I promised I wouldn't have a tad to you about gotcha journalism.
Hang into the National Party's tagline there.
It would be a resignation offence if I didn't deliver tax reduction.
I'm not worried about it at all.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on.
Whatever happens in politics, the weird, the wonderful, the important, the thought-provoking, we got you. Listen to Tova wherever you get your podcasts.